Thursday, March 15th. It's 1:20, and we are calling to order the House Committee on Education and the subcommittee. And we have one bill today that we're happy to have our first public hearing on. And before we get started, even with the bill summary, I want to kind of share how we want to proceed. We have multiple presenters today, and I'm not joking, a minimum of 20. And so, therefore, I'm going to ask people to keep their comments brief at times. We will start out with Representative Roblin and Senator Devlin, and then as teams of people come up, different panels, then we'll talk about who's going to maybe give the overview and who can, you know, share their comments very shortly. So we'll do that, and we'll start out, and I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2574, and Mr. Olson, would you give us a bill summary?
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2574 modifies beginning teacher and administrator mentoring program. It modifies the qualifications and specifies training for mentors, increases the amount of grants and aid per teacher or administrator that the school district may receive. It allows the Department of Education to accept contributions for purposes of program evaluation and applies to the 2008-2009 school year. And then briefly, the Dash 2 Amendment, which members you have before you and members of the audience, there's copies of the Dash 2 Amendment up on the rack in the back. The Dash 2 Amendment replaces the text of House Bill 2574 and, aside from what I've already discussed, makes the following changes. It clarifies administrator as a principal or superintendent. It changes the eligibility time for mentees to fewer than two school years rather than fewer than three successive school years. It clarifies that a mentor can be an acting or retired teacher, principal, or superintendent. And it states that the Department of Education may not spend more than 2.5% of the total money on evaluating the program. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Could I have our committee assistant, because I know this is a bill most dear to Representative Roblin's heart, if you could call his office. And while we're doing that, Senator, do you want to wait, Senator? Okay. Maybe we'll start with Sue Hildick and Dana Hepper. And if you can give us an overview while we wait for Representative Roblin. Because I think you had something to help initiate this process also.
We did. I'm just going to give a just brief overview, and Sue's going to go into some of the research behind why we've initiated this. So first, I just want to say I'm really, really excited to be here today. As a former first-year teacher, this is something very near and dear to my heart, so I'm thrilled that we're here discussing it. Thank you. The Quality Mentors for New Educators bill stemmed from kind of an unexpected collaboration between Stanford Children and Chalkboard Project. We had kind of simultaneous work groups running to look into some of the highest leverage investments we could make to improve public schools.
And Dan, I need you to say your name for the record.
Oh, sorry, Dana Hepper, Stanford Children. And simultaneously came up with mentoring of teachers and principals in their first couple years as something that we thought would be a really worthy thing to invest in. And so we came together to request this bill. Today, just want to be clear, the people that you're going to hear from are going to be talking about the Dash 2 amendments, which were the result of a collaborative work group from a number of stakeholders who really helped us to improve the language in the mentor bill. And just wanted to publicly thank first James Sager, who facilitated this work group, and then the members of the work group. From ODE, we had Ed Dennis, Pat Burks, Rob Larson, Salam Noor, Jennifer Williamson. From TSPC, we had Vicki Chamberlain. From Western Oregon University, Hilda Roselli. From Lewis and Clark, Peter Cookson. University of Portland, Thomas Green. Oregon University System, Yvette Weber-Davis. Representative Roblin was a member of the work group, along with Kate Dixon and Sue Hildick from Chalkboard Project, and an active Stanford Children member and former school administrator, Tom Olson. So thanks to all of them for bringing their wisdom, experience, and commitment to the group. Also, just want to acknowledge publicly the chief sponsors on the House side, Representative Arnie Roblin and Representative Linda Flores, Senator Devlin being a chief sponsor on the Senate side, as well as a bipartisan array of sponsors to this bill. And with that, I'll turn it over to Sue Hildick. I was going to tell you who you're going to listen to, but I think it might get a little thrown off, so
okay.
I'll just let it happen.
Thank you.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Sue Hildick. I'm the president of the Chalkboard Project, and it's really nice to be before you today on an issue where there's a lot of agreement, and that makes me feel good. There's a lot of common ground around this bill, and we're really pleased with the partnership that we have with Stand for Children, and we want to commend them for their efforts. They've done a tremendous amount of work around this proposal, and really the bill you see before you today is due to their hard efforts, and Chalkboard's really pleased to support that. I think from both our best practices research and also from the public opinion work we've done around the state, this has emerged as a clear priority, really from both places. This is something that Oregonians connect deeply to, and also best practices really points the way to a strong mentor and induction program for Oregon's educators. I think we all know that teacher effectiveness is the biggest single factor influencing student achievement. This bill speaks to that. If we want all students to succeed, we need great teachers in every classroom, and we also need great leaders in every school. So quickly, just where do we stand? Nearly 40% of new teachers in Oregon leave their jobs within the first 5 years. And new teachers are especially vulnerable when they're assigned to lower performing students and they receive little additional support and feedback. Our research shows that poor support and poor working conditions and a lack of experience are often the reasons that teachers leave the profession. And the attrition is costly to us as a state. We estimate approximately $45 million per year. There's a lot of history in our testimony that you have in front of you that explains that Oregon has tried to put this program in place before, back in 1987 and again in 2001. And I think I'd categorize it as sort of fits and starts. We've never been able to sustain the kind of commitment we're asking for today with this program. And districts have really been left to themselves to sort of piece this together. We're asking to change that today and to really make a statewide commitment long-term to help our new teachers. I want to share a story with you that actually comes from the National Education Association. They have put out a fantastic paper about how to institute a mentorship program, which I'll put in the record. But this vignette, I think, sort of tells the story pretty clearly. Imagine that you aspire to be a mountaineer. You have a new pair of boots, a tent, a backpack, and endless enthusiasm, but you have never so much as climbed above the tree line. There are two ways to get into it. You could take a practice run with somebody who has lots of experience and the ability to share it. And the other way is to be taken to the base of Everest, dropped off, and told to get to the top or quit. If you don't make it, your enthusiasm disappears, and you seek ways to avoid similar challenges in the future. Too often, beginning teachers find themselves alone at the bottom of the world's tallest mountain. Many compare their first year to climbing a mountain that is cloud-covered. You can't see very far ahead, and you don't often know how high the mountain is. Another describes it as a journey from which there is no map to guide you. I think what we're trying to do today with this legislation is provide those guides for Oregon's new teachers and principals. Again, there's a lot of research in our testimony that indicates that these programs have worked in other states. Maybe the most compelling is what California has been able to do, which is a statewide effort to enhance new teacher mentoring, and it's reduced their attrition rate to 5% compared to what is a national rate of about 40% in the first 5 years. The National Commission on Teaching and America's Future also strongly urges support for early career teachers. There's a lot of other studies listed in our testimony, but I think where I'd like to end is sharing with you what we've heard from Oregonians. As you know, we've been deeply across the state and talked with practitioners and citizens, and what we find is a lot of agreement around better supports for teachers. Oregonians revere their teachers, and they want them to have the tools that they need to successfully teach our children. So just a few highlights. 75% of Oregonians say that improving teacher quality is a high or urgent priority. 71% say that ensuring all schools have effective principals is, again, a high or urgent priority. 71% believe helping teachers work together to improve curriculum and instruction is a high priority. 71% say an inability to attract and retain highly qualified teachers is a major obstacle to school success. And finally, 61% say creating peer mentoring programs for all new teachers is a high priority. In sum, there's a great deal of agreement by practitioners, the public, researchers, that mentoring for new educators is a critical element of building performance success in the early years on the job. We'd like to see or even offer this program to every new teacher, every new administrator. And with that, I will close. Thank you.
Just that you, I'll ask for an opportunity for questions, but I was just informed that they're still doing some remonstrances on the floor, and so that's where our colleagues are. And I was given permission to start the meeting because we knew we had a number of people that were going to speak today. So, but we're kind of finding out the timeline as what people are appearing. But do we have any questions from my colleagues that are here? Representative Cannon.
Madam Chair, I really want to try to make sure that we hear from as many of the people on the list as possible. So I'll keep this really brief, and perhaps your answers will be too. But as you know, I think both of you know, I'm a teacher and my wife is a teacher. And talk about my own experience. The two people I would call mentors in my experience, neither was designated a mentor. In my wife's experience, she had a mentor through her school. You know, there was some formal arrangement, but her closest mentor was, again, an unofficial one. And we connected with those people because of shared philosophies, because of a personal relationship that we clicked, because we were collaborating perhaps on projects or students together. I totally support this notion of developing mentoring relationships. How will this program preserve enough flexibility to accommodate that kind of spontaneous, perhaps we were really lucky, both my wife and I, to find these people, but how do we preserve enough flexibility to make sure that when the relationship really works over here, that that's the relationship that takes hold and is encouraged?
Well, I think in House Bill 2574, one of the things we've really, Chair Comp, Representative Cannon, one of the things we've really worked to do is preserve a level of flexibility while increasing accountability and making an investment in mentoring so that it's not just lucky teachers who happen to find someone who clicks, who can advise them in the break room, but actually that person that they click with has the ability to come into their classroom, watch them teach, and give advice on how they can get better. It's a much more high leverage, much more strategic way to ensure that our mentoring is not just making our teachers feel better about our job, but our mentoring is actually helping our teachers increase the student achievement of the kids in their class and increase their success and ability to teach well. So essentially, districts' mentor programs can be whatever they want as long as they meet the provisions within the law, which are based on best practices of what we've seen work in improving teacher effectiveness and improving student achievement across the country. Does that answer your question?
I think so. If just a quick follow-up, if you could point very quickly in the amendment, if you have it in front of you, to where the best practices are. Do you know that by chance, that the programs, the mentoring programs, would have to meet? Perhaps there's some... I can hold on to this question as well.
That would be helpful so that she has time to look it up.
Sure.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate it. We're going to transition. Senator, are you on a timeline?
Actually, I'm probably getting booked up with appointments with people that want money. But I'd be happy to go forward with the superintendent.
That's what I was going to suggest. Yes, Senator Devlin, Superintendent Castillo, and also Julia Brim Edwards, if you would be okay with joining this panel.
Yes, ma'am.
I'd be honored.
And, Senator, did you want to start? Or do you want Superintendent Castillo? Okay.
Thank you, Senator. Chair Comp and members of the committee, for the record, I'm Susan Castillo. I'm the State Superintendent of Public Instruction for the State of Oregon. And I'm here to support House Bill 2574, which would create the Oregon New Educator Mentor Program. I am proud to be here and speak in support of this bill. I think the education advocates, the Stanford Children, Chalkboard, certainly the leadership of the governor on this issue, and over a dozen Republican and Democratic legislators have signed on to sponsor this this bill, and it is just wonderful to see it get such strong support. We know the research shows us that the better prepared our teachers are to face the challenges of the classroom, the better our students will learn and grow. But all too often, our public schools, the students who face the greatest learning obstacles are typically taught by the teachers who have the least experience and few avenues of support. So in addition to Oregon Public Schools are undergoing a dramatic change, and our new teachers, I just want to talk a little bit about the challenges that they're facing today educating our students that are far different from previous generations of Oregon teachers. Almost 43% of our public school students are eligible for free and reduced lunch. Oregon has 13,000 homeless students, and this number is growing. Oregon is seeing rapid growth in the number of special education students, and we now have 72,000 students identified with special education needs. And as the face of Oregon continues to change, we've had unprecedented increases in the number of English language learners. Today we have over 65,000 ELL students. And when you couple these dramatic demographic shifts in our students with federal mandates like No Child Left Behind and the significant funding cuts our schools have sustained over the past few years, it's any wonder that in Oregon we lose about 30% of our new teachers within their first 3 years on the job. And then additionally, high teacher turnover not only hampers student learning, but it costs Oregon taxpayers an estimated $45 million each year in administrative costs to replace so many teachers. That's where research-based mentor programs come in. By investing upfront in teacher mentoring that specifically focuses on first and second-year teachers and administrators, we can increase teacher and administrator effectiveness, improve student achievement, close the achievement gap, increase teacher retention and new administrator retention, and significantly reduce costs associated with teacher turnover. So I believe that this bill really is about smart state spending. Investing in teachers and administrators means more success for our students in our classrooms. So I just wanted to be here to just deliver a very strong endorsement for this legislation, and good bills should pass.
I wonder Thank where you. You've heard that before. Any questions for Superintendent Castillo? Okay. Thank you, Superintendent.
Thank you.
And Representative Robel, I would love to, if you would maybe switch, well, not, you can't
I'll
switch
wait.
Chairs
I'll
with Superintendent Castillo, but if you want to join Senator Devlin at the...
I would be glad to do that. Sorry that we were late. The floor session kept going.
I know. I understood that.
It's very important.
It was very important.
I'm not, well, I'm sure it was. I don't have any doubts. And either Representative Roblin or Senator Devlin.
Madam Chair, because I'm going to have to explain to my staff why appointments are backed up,
yes,
I
sir.
Think I should probably get out of here as soon as possible. Now, I want to
That means we only have 40 questions for the Senator.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I have actually prepared testimony here, not to submit, but I want to say that my staff did a good job on that. But I'd like to speak actually extemporaneously here about this subject and why I think I should speak extemporaneously rather than recite statistics to you about why this is important. Many of us here, just go around the room, Representative Dallum, Representative Roblin, Representative Comp, myself and a number of our colleagues both from the House and the Senate served on an unofficial committee this interim that was neither appointed by the Speaker or the President. It was actually a number of people that wanted to get together and talk about the future of education in this state. And I think each one of us, everyone from that committee, actually supports this legislation. And I think we support it not only because some of us are professional educators, which I am not, and I have a respect for all professional educators, whether they're teachers or administrators, but because we recognize the importance of it. Now, I will not tell you here that the one-tenth, the 1% that this expenditure represents of the state school fund is more important than any other dollar in the state school fund. because I will tell you every dollar that's invested in the state school fund pays a much higher dividend than what the public investment is. But I will tell you that any budget that doesn't include this is a budget that is short-sighted. And it's short-sighted not only because of the number of good teachers that come forward, but because they lack the support that they need, leave the profession, and the loss both in skill, the loss in resources that occurs there, but the long-term loss that occurs because good people do not stay in the profession is a great loss. Also, I should say, without even citing statistics, many of us know that due to some transitions, ages of workforces, changes in our retirement system, many of the most experienced teachers that we have in this state have left in the last half dozen years. A level of experience that will be extremely hard to replace. I don't think we can make any greater investment than what we are making here today with the dollars that are being put forward. I think nothing else that we could do in terms of anything that we could consider in terms of an additional program would have a greater investment. Now, I would like to close basically just by doing something that I occasionally do, reciting a personal experience. I had many great teachers growing up in Oregon public schools. I remember two of them quite well. One was Miss Faulkner, who I didn't like, and one was Mr. Woodman, who I did like. They were both very good teachers. Mr. Woodman, who was my speech and forensics teacher, was the one that inspired me towards public service and the one that that actually convinced me that I could get up amongst many crowds and speak to the public what my views were on different issues. I will always remember Mr. Woodman. I will always actually remember Miss Fernald, too. She was my English teacher. And I actually liked her many years after I left school because she actually inspired my interest in literature. Why I didn't like her is she could see through any sort of ruse. There was no way to escape her glare. There was no way to tell her that you'd read this chapter in Joseph Conrad and get away with just having read Cliff Notes or something. So she was a very tough teacher. There are a lot of Mr. Woodman's and Ms. Fernald's in our school system. There are a lot that have left. We need to find some way to transfer this great expertise to those. And if I could comment about administrators also, I should have not left out administrators, looking at the chair and looking at my colleagues. One of the things I've noticed being a parent and being a legislator and traveling in a lot of schools is we have a lot of great administrators. But I will tell you one thing that I have seen is that in a school, a good principal can make a good school great. A principal that is not prepared for his or her duties can make a good school only fair to poor. A good principal that empowers his teachers or her teachers and their other staff actually can make this an unbelievably good environment. And getting the good principals that we will need in the future and the good superintendents, many of which have left and will be leaving soon, is also just as important as what we put into making sure that we have good teachers in our classrooms. With that, I am on this bill as the chief sponsor with my principal task, finding the money to fund it.
And Senator, if before you leave, if you'd state your name for the record.
Oh, well, since I tell people to do this all day long. thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Richard Devlin, Senate District 19.
Thank you so much for your testimony.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Wigman.
Thank you. Before the Senator leaves, because he has the money, I understand that.
Not much.
After we talked to the coach last year and under his chairmanship, Senator, will going from 5 to 3 years, will that make the requirement less than what we're looking at?
I believe the reference there is to the years of experience.
Yes, sir.
I think that's beneficial. I don't think it'll have an impact on the fiscal impact of the bill. Or should not.
Thank you, Senator. And don't send me the bill. I mean, the bill for all your unattended appointments. Representative Roblin.
Okay. Chair Comp Committee. My name is Representative Arnie Roblin from District 9. It really is a pleasure to be here today to speak to this bill. And I'm going to do a personal story as well before I go on. Most of the students at the school where I was principal knew, and a lot of the people around here know, that I am an ADHD dyslexic person. And so school, at the elementary levels in particular, was not a great activity for me. And in elementary school, I remember that, like his good teachers, I had a few teachers that recognized that sitting was not one of my greatest attributes. And so I got to be the person that took the chalk erasers and cleaned them down the hall, and patrol boy, so I got out to get outside and move around. And they recognized early that if I didn't have a little activity, I probably wasn't going to learn anything. And if they kept me in the seat, I was probably going to be a problem. Well, I bring that up because I was going through the school at a time, and I know I had outstanding teachers because they recognized those things. They understood some of those things. They found extra ways to get information to me that gave me a chance, even though I was falling behind in a number of those areas. It gave me a chance that as school went on, and it started to click for me better and better through middle school and high school, that I was ready to be a learner and to improve my life through education. When you are a brand new teacher and all of the things are coming at you, the 30 kids in the classroom, the different expectations from the school to make sure that you get all the paperwork done, you do this and you do that, just keeping afloat is really a lot of work. And therefore, recognizing the differences in each of those 30 kids and what they need specifically to help them become the learner they can be becomes almost impossible to do. However, if your school has the opportunity to put in place a mentor to help you, all of a sudden, the idea of how do I do this paperwork, how do I get this, where's the bathroom, I have someone that I can ask where all of those things are, and all of a sudden, that stuff kind of parts away, and I can start getting back to focusing on my subject matter first, and then hopefully, with that really good mentor, how do your students interact with your subject matter, especially at the high school level? What can you do to give them the same passion about your subject matter that you have? And it comes from guidance with people who are trained, who really understand and have been in your shoes before. We have had mentor programs in our state on and off for years, and that's the problem. They have been on and off for years, depending on how much money we had at a particular time, a program. And so when I had an opportunity to work with the different groups that have brought this to you, Stand for Children, Chalkboard, a number of other organizations that have all got together and said, this is a great bill, clearly the issue I want to talk about was, do we know really great mentoring programs? Do they exist? And how are we going to fund them? And how do we make sure that funding stays over time so that teachers that come today will be here tomorrow? And more importantly, when they start that first year teaching, you know, the research-based program you're looking at and you'll have answers to today has shown that a first-year teacher with a mentor can have the same impact on their students in their classroom that a third-year teacher has. So we're not giving up 2 years of investment in these children because of the investment we have to make in teachers to get them to understand the real workings. That it's starting right now. And I think that benefit, more than any, is going to continue to help the achievement of our kids and the possibility of continued improvement. If we don't invest in our new teachers and our new principals, we are destined not to continue to see the improvement we need to have, because, as we heard earlier, we have a large number of new teachers coming into the business right now because of situations that have happened over the last number of years. The same is true with administrators and finding them. And so getting that information to those people so that they can be more and more effective, so that they can use new tools that have been developed and other teachers have used and employed and that they may never have known before in the context of doing it at the same time that I'm teaching those kids is essential. And so I implore you to look at this bill, to move it forward, and to set the importance that we all have for our students in the hands of well-trained and now mentored teachers and administrators. Thank you for your time. I look forward to any questions you might have.
Okay. Representative Roll, you want to stay there?
Sure.
Because Ms. Brim Edwards needs to leave early, and so I want to give her a chance to testify. And if people, please write down your quiz questions for Representative Roblin. I have one, but that's all. Just Brim Edwards.
Good afternoon, and thank you for accommodating me. I'm actually on my way to meet with Beaverton School District people to talk about this exact topic. I'm Julia Brim Edwards, Nike State and Public Affairs Director. I'm also the former co-chair of the Portland School Board. I'm currently serving as the co-chair of the PSU's Graduate School of Education's Advisory Board and a constituent of Representative Cannon's. Feeling well represented. I'm here today to offer both community and business support for this bill. You've already heard from some people, and we'll hear later from other people who are testifying today about the details, the data to support this. But I wanted to offer sort of a community and business support. Nike is supporting the mentoring bill and is a company with about 6,900 employees in Oregon. Our employees want strong, healthy public schools for their families, their children, and their community members. And in order to have strong, healthy schools, we need high-quality, effective teachers in every classroom and high-quality, effective leaders in every school building. Earlier this year, Nike announced the creation of the Nike School Innovation Fund, which is a five-year, $9 million investment in basically two initiatives. One is early primary grades, but the second piece is school leadership development. And we're funding leadership academies and institutes in addition to new principal development in three districts that should have an impact on about 100,000 kids collectively. And we look at this, our investment, as something that could complement and provide support for the state investment in both teacher mentoring and principal and administrator mentoring. And we look at, if this legislation is passed, that there's lots of opportunities for exchange of best practices between the state, school districts, the community, and business. So if that's from Nike's standpoint, as an employer with lots of employees here in our communities that care about strong public schools, and we know what it takes to make those strong public schools, and leadership is a key component, and having mentors so that you have strong leaders is a key piece of it. But I also want to speak as a former school board chair that when I was serving on the school board, one of the things I did during my campaign and then during my service is met individually with, Portland has about 100 principals, lots of new ones. I was there during the PERS change, so we had a big influx of new principals coming in, and meeting individually with principals and also with a lot of new teachers, one of the things they consistently spoke of, and sometimes they use the word mentoring, but a lot of times it was really expressing a need for to have a colleague to just sort of share stories with, have their work critiqued in a productive way or in a non-threatening way so that they could either have their work validated or improve their practice. And, you know, almost to a person, I found people wanting to improve their work they did and really seeking out to be a better leader, to be a better teacher, and looking for ways that, in my case, the school board or maybe the school district could help them be more effective and be a better leader or be a better classroom teacher. So I think this bill will have a huge impact, some of it indirectly, on students, but it will take us on the way to really getting us to the goal of having, I think, a high-quality, effective teacher in every classroom, getting teachers off to the right start, and same thing with administrators. So Nike's delighted to be supporting the bill and look forward to working as a partner from the business community on this particular initiative. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay, for the panel? Thank you. Have a safe trip.
Thank you.
Okay. And Representative Roblin, I just have one question, and any presenter could. You can.
I want to hear his wisdom.
Oh, okay. So you still have 2 minutes, so you can get to the freeway. I was wondering if the discussion was held about the incredible need for English language learner teachers. Frequently, when we hire teachers teaching literacy in particular, some of us as administrators, we set the bar pretty high because we'd like to see the children grow a year and a half, not just 1 year's worth of growth in their speaking and understanding skills. And so, and this is a growing part of our demographics. Did you pay any particular attention? Because these teachers, I mean, if they do not have mentoring, at best, they only last 2 years in the classroom.
Yeah, we didn't talk specifically in my discussions about any particular one, but I mean, I think the truth is that each of the different subjects, teaching math at different levels can be very frustrating for people and just as difficult. It is a language acquisition, having been a math person. It's just a different language. And sometimes there's advantages with that with kids that don't speak English. Math is the place where you can have a conversation, sometimes easier. But what this bill is about really is getting the people in the right places. And so if you have outstanding teachers who have the ability to do that, and that's a real need in your district, then that's probably the person you want to talk to about coming over and becoming that mentor for a number of people. And that's a perfect example of the kind of thing that goes across curriculum and everything else. No matter what you're teaching, if you haven't had the training to be able to speak to kids that need language acquisition, it's going to be difficult for you. So having a mentor that has those skills that can help explain, because there are some simple techniques at times that you can use in your classroom if you are not a native speaker of a different language, that can help you communicate with that person and that family. But the other thing that's even more important is that I think sometimes the new teacher comes in and doesn't realize that there are resources in the district to help them with that, and resources for their students to help them with those kinds of things, and families. But when you have a mentor teacher who already understands the district and knows those things, they say, look, you're having that problem. Yeah, I mean, we all have that problem. Here are the resources within the district that can help you do that. And sometimes, for a new teacher, it takes them a lot longer to find those resources than they would otherwise. So, specifically not discussed, but again, a real reason for having a mentor program in a district.
It's critical. And the only other thing I'd share before we call up our next presenters is I was administrator for about 8 years before we applied for an innovative grant that gave us some mentoring, and particularly for leadership. It was incredible to make the time to talk to another experienced principal about strategies and reviewing things, and I learned more in that 1 year than I would have in 2 or 3 years of struggling on my own. And seriously, that was after about 8 years of administration, and it was still an incredibly powerful experience.
And just to speak to that, one of the reasons for having good mentors for administration is exactly that.
Right.
It often takes administrators longer than teachers to find out all the resources out there, because it's a very wide and cluttered field of how do we get things that we need to help us become better administrators. And you have an outstanding administrator in an area who has already done through that, has been through writing the grants, understands it, or knows the people who write those things really well, has the connections in the State Department and other places, and they can pass that on instead of having to learn that all over by yourself, is essential for the successful indoctrination into the administrative staff that administrators have. So again, if you give people the head start that many of us did not have with respect to that, the chances of more and more success are highly increased.
Well, and the other component that was the most critical, valuable piece, my mentor researched for me best practices. And when I didn't have time to say, how can we show our, you know, work and what we're getting done, she would go do that research and bring that research tool to me for best practice, and that was incredible.
Yep.
So, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, we have a panel that we're going to call it our leadership panel, and so we've had a couple of people off that panel, but we have not had Deborah Summers speak to us. So, Deborah, are you okay coming up here kind of all alone?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Madam Chair, can I ask, while everybody's getting ready, on the Dash 2 amendments we have before us, were these the product of a work group, or I want to at some point find out who we will be questioning about the Dash 2 amendments.
Okay, because actually, Representative Roblin, did you hear the question?
I did not.
Representative Buckley was asking if the amendments were a product of a work group.
I think a number of them, but yes. A group of people coming together to make sure that it comes out the way we all really want it to happen. And you'll hear some more from other people in testimony.
And what would be a good process, because some people have questions about the amendments. Should we wait until after testimony?
Yeah, I'd wait until testimony.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Representative Roblin. Deborah.
Thank you. My name is Deborah Sommer. This is my 35th year in public education in Oregon. I've spent the last 12 years as a school district superintendent, the last 8 in my current position as superintendent in the Canby School District. I'd like to speak today in support of the Quality Mentors for New Educators bill. I'm not representing any organization. I'm just here as a long-term educator. I'm supporting that legislation and your efforts to allocate funds to districts seeking to support beginning teachers and administrators. Several of you have spoken, you clearly know, you've been inside schools.
Superintendent, you can...
Am I too close?
Yes.
Yeah, it's very sensitive.
Just how's that?
Well, we have some assistance.
Thank you. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Teaching is a profession in which its practitioners face several organizational and funding obstacles that I believe actually impede their professional growth. And I'd like to make 3 points this afternoon in support of this legislation, that the points being related to those obstacles. The first obstacle is the lack of time, and that is an organizational problem that we all face inside schools and school districts. Teachers lack time during the school day to plan collaboratively, to share professional knowledge, or to address with their colleagues the significant challenges related to student achievement, student discipline, parent relationships, curriculum design, or the mandates imposed upon us, both at the state and federal level in terms of testing. They have instead a 30-minute duty-free lunch and 4 to 5 in-service days throughout an entire school year to address the complexities of their work. If they even have a plan period inside the school day, and only secondary teachers have this, not elementary, that 45 to 60-minute period is devoted to preparing lessons, calling parents, grading papers for anywhere from 120 to 150 students per day. Elementary teachers must handle that same instructional preparation work either before or after school, as they do not have any non-student contact time during their workday. This is the reality of schools, and a beginning teacher, even more than other teachers, needs more time. They can't save up their questions regarding organizing their lessons or managing their classrooms until the next in-service day comes along 2 months down the line. They can't figure out what to do to help a struggling student while hoping to catch their supervising teacher in between his bus duty, on his way to a grade level meeting, after a parent conference, or while doing lunch duty in the cafeteria. Funds to support a mentoring program would allow districts to pay for time outside the school day for beginning teachers to get the support and help they need to be successful in today's complex and increasingly diverse classrooms. That time currently does not exist. The second obstacle I'd like to reference today is that, from my view, teaching is a profession that has no graduated entry plan like many other professions. We don't have an apprenticeship option or a journeyman level of expertise. We don't have multi-year periods of residency or internship. What we do have in education is a sink or swim approach to preparing new entrants. A 3-month, maybe a 6-month student teaching experience if he or she is lucky. And then, again, no significant time during the day or time outside of the school hours to work in conjunction with their colleagues. Even more important, after those 3 to 6 months of student teaching, I believe it is critical to recognize that the beginning teacher has the exact same level of responsibility as the experienced veteran 30 years later. Mm-hmm. And the student teacher supervising teacher has no formal way within our profession, no time provided other than what they can squeeze in around their other duties to share 30 years worth of formal craft knowledge. The fact is that teachers learn to teach on their own in isolated classrooms, largely by trial and error, because we do not fund education at a level that provides time for professionals to engage in dialogue around their profession, the intricate art and science of teaching. We cannot afford to pay master teachers who would teach adults. We can barely fund the classrooms we are running now, and we cannot afford adults who teach anything other than children. The master teacher concept costs too much money, yet no other developed nation organizes or runs its schools in this way. Every teacher who retires from the classroom walks out that door with 25 to 30 years of hard-won knowledge. We've heard a lot about supporting those new teachers, and I certainly advocate for that, but we are losing a tremendous resource, not just in Oregon, but in all public schools. That veteran teacher has knowledge that is gained partly through instinct, partly through trial and error, and partly through observation, seeing the impact of instruction on literally thousands of young people who pass through their classroom and who are lucky enough to be educated and to educate that teacher as to what does or does not work in terms of effective instruction. But that seasoned veteran currently has no way to share those valuable lessons, no depository for that hard-won wisdom, and no way to give back to their profession. Funds to support a mentoring program would allow districts to pay for time outside the school day for veteran teachers to support the next generation of teachers, teachers we desperately need. And that's my third and final point, defining that desperate need. Teaching is not a profession for the faint-hearted, we know that. But we must be able to attract passionate, young, dedicated, and enthusiastic people into Oregon's classrooms. And it is becoming increasingly difficult to do so for many reasons. Unstable and inadequate school funding in Oregon scares some candidates away. We face large class sizes, more difficult and needy children, families often too busy and sometimes unwilling to be involved. But those candidates who have the heart for the work, despite these obstacles, they still come. And they still believe that they can make a difference to children. But our new teacher candidates now ask a question that up until about the last 3 or 4 years, I had not heard. It's the uppermost question on their mind. It is not a question about salary. It is not a question about the level of their health care benefits, because no one goes into teaching if that's their number one concern. The 40 new teachers we've hired in Canby for this school year are like the others we've noticed in the last several. Their number one question is what they can anticipate for support. Someone has told them in their teacher preparation programs about the teacher dropout rate. And they want to know if their supervising teacher is available or if substitutes can be provided on a periodic basis for them to talk, to problem solve, and to reflect on what they and their students are learning. They want to know if we can support their attendance at a conference or a workshop or to observe a master teacher down the hall. Mostly they want to know that if they stumble in this overwhelming task of meeting all the needs of every child that comes through our door, and they will stumble, if they stumble with that overwhelming task, will our response be to laugh and say, as my supervising teacher said to me many, many years ago, and this is a true quote, well, you know what? What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. 40%, 30%, I've heard different numbers here today, but certainly a significant number of those entering our profession will leave within the first 5 years. It is a tough job. But funds for a mentoring program in Oregon, sustained over time, will allow us to provide at least some support for these young people and some way for those with so much knowledge to give back to our profession. These funds will help us hang on to our most critical resource in education, the people who work with our children. I urge your support of this bill, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Superintendent Summers. Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Superintendent, thank you so much for your testimony. Thank you for your work. I'm very gratified to see that the Dash 2 amendments include retired teachers. And I'm going to ask a really simple question. Would it be your preference as a superintendent to be using retired teachers as mentors rather than currently serving teachers?
Quite frankly, I would just like the option, because there are some retired teachers that maybe don't have the skill set or the energy or the dedication to want to do that, and there are others within the system who do. I'd like that flexibility as a superintendent.
Very good. Can I ask one follow-up?
Briefly, because I'm going to give an update of how many people we have.
Oh, very good.
Go right ahead.
I'm sure we'll get to the follow-up. We'll get to the follow-up.
Okay.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank
you're
you. Just so people do know where we're headed here, we have approximately 8 more people that want to speak. And so I'm going to call up our next panel, which is Peter Cookson, Mary Beth Van Cleve, and Randy Hitz. Mr. Cookson, do you want to start us out? Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay, thank you.
Pleasure.
Yes, but it is sensitive. And
all right, can you hear me all right?
Absolutely.
Good. Well, good afternoon. Thanks for having me down here. I'm going to read a couple very short things here, and then we'll leave time for questions. So good afternoon, Chairman Kopp and members of the committee. It is a pleasure to be here today, and I'm honored to be asked to speak. About this very important educational issue. I am Peter Cookson. I'm the Dean of the Graduate School of Education and Counseling at Lewis and Clark College. I'm here today to testify in support of House Bill 2574, which supports a mentoring program for beginning teachers and administrators. I believe this is a well-crafted bill and will serve the children and families of Oregon in the coming years. As many of you know, the quality and stability of our teaching and administrative workforce is the bedrock upon which quality education rests. At the end of the day, from the point of view of the student, it is the teacher in the classroom and the administrator who supports the teacher who either opens the doors to learning or closes them prematurely. Oregon has an outstanding teaching and administrative workforce, among the best in the country. However, we lose too many of our beginning teachers and administrators because they're not adequately prepared for the realities of classrooms and schools, and because there's a crying need for support, particularly in the early years. You're all well aware of how many new teachers we lose after 5 years. I want you to imagine the following with me. A young lawyer is hired by a law firm, and then without support from the other lawyers on the first day on the job, she or he is asked to argue a case before the U.S. Supreme Court. I think we would all agree this would be a very poor practice. Yet, in effect, that is what we do with new teachers and administrators all too often. We place them in the most challenging teaching and learning environment, give them minimal support, and expect them to perform at world-class level. Amazingly, many do. But some talented teachers and administrators need systematic support. And this is what this bill provides. By supporting all new teachers and administrators, we can have confidence there's consistency across schools and classrooms in this state. Given the high mobility rate among our students, this consistency is essential for providing a highly qualified teachers and administrators within school boundaries and across school boundaries. If this bill is passed, new teachers and administrators will be supported at their district level by highly qualified mentors. Mentorship works. The weekly contact between mentors and beginning teachers and administrators will ensure that new educators receive research-based knowledge about effective practices and begin to internalize the wisdom of practice that is the hallmark of a genuine professional. For a relatively small amount of money, the results will be a higher level of teaching and leadership, stability in our educational workforce, and greater achievement for all our students. I have been developing new teacher programs for a decade across various parts of the country. I have seen educator programs in the East Coast, in the South, and here in Oregon. At Lewis and Clark College, we have pioneered a new teacher education program and hosted a summit last year around the issue of providing support for new teachers. We know from experience that teacher induction programs can quickly become teacher leadership programs that transform schools and school districts. If I were to pick a single reform that would have the greatest impact on the quality of education in Oregon schools, it would be the passage of this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dean. Any questions for the dean? I've heard great things about Lewis and Clark. Yes, sir.
I'll make one comment. I truly appreciated having the opportunity to attend part of the workshop you had last for new teachers, and I commend the work that's being done at Lewis and Clark around teacher mentoring and support for those new teachers, because I was impressed at that meeting of the thoughtfulness and the other things that you brought to bear at that. So I just want to say thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Van Cleve?
Yes. Chair Comp and members of the committee, thank you so much for inviting me to appear today. I, too, am a constituent of Representative Cannon, so it's good to see you there. I'm here as a retired teacher and principal of 30 years. I've also taught both pre-service and early career teachers at Lewis and Clark and Portland State, and I'm wholeheartedly in support of this bill. Through my long years as an educator, and it is pretty long now, I've become fully and at times painfully aware of how hungry beginning teachers are for good, solid mentoring. I believe that an investment made early in teachers' development will have immediate payoff in terms of their students' achievements and long-term returns in terms of teachers' effectiveness, commitment, and staying power. I have found that habits and attitudes teachers acquire during their first 3 years are powerful predictors of their futures as educators. Now, because I'm an old principal, and principals deal with nitty-gritty stuff, I'm here to deal with the nitty-gritty thing. I haven't heard any of you, but I've heard it said that there have been questions asked about why the principal just can't serve as a mentor for a teacher. So here's the deal. There are about three reasons why I think this is not a good idea. First of all, the demands on a principal's times are extraordinary and unpredictable. Most principals are already stretched too thin. And a beginning teacher needs consistent, extensive, quality time with a mentor. I can't tell you how many times I've been in a conference with a teacher after an observation and the phone is rung and said, get down to the office right now. And that's very, very difficult psychologically for a teacher to have to experience. So even though a principal's heart might be in the right place, the realities of the job will make that difficult. Second, it's impossible that any given principal would have all the subject or grade matter expertise necessary to be an in-depth mentor for every teacher. So just imagine, I'm an elementary principal. My background was as a middle school teacher and a middle school vice principal, and I'm an elementary principal. And the kindergarten teacher really needs help knowing how to set up her learning stations. I'm not going to be much good sitting in that little chair trying to do that. I'm a high school principal and my background is as an English teacher, and a math teacher really needs to develop hands-on activities to help his students acquire some math concepts. I might not be much help. You know, I can talk to you about gerunds, but I might not know enough about prime numbers to really be able to be a good mentor in that situation. So a well-trained mentor with considerable expertise in a particular content area or grade level would be much better equipped than a well-meaning principal to support each of these beginning teachers. Finally, and perhaps most important, a principal is primarily charged with the responsibility to supervise and evaluate. Even in the best of circumstances, it's virtually impossible to combine the function of an evaluator with the role of a mentor. In all likelihood, a new teacher who knew that the renewal of his contract lay in the principal's hands would find it difficult to talk and risky to talk openly about a particular difficulty in his classroom. And the principal would also find it difficult not to remember information or impressions gathered in mentoring sessions as she wrote the teacher's evaluation. I'm convinced that the richest context for mentoring occurs outside of the formal evaluation process. So it's for these reasons that I'm just thrilled that this House bill has come before you, and I urge you to support it. Thank you very much.
And Principal Van Cleve, I need you to state your name for the record.
My name is Mary Beth Van Cleve.
Thank you. Thank you. Any questions for
here comes just Van just a quick comment as a for the committee, as I think you can tell from the wisdom and texture of Mary Beth's testimony. She is one of these principals who, when you're out in the community meeting families and talking about schools, she's one of the ones that you hear about, and a real asset to Portland and Portland schools. And I would be saying that even if I didn't know that she was a constituent.
Yeah.
Was that the, it's all?
That's all.
Okay.
Just
okay.
A comment.
Representative Dolla?
I want to, I remember the first day as a principal wanting to register my new teacher as a senior, and my first day as a superintendent struggling to open the door to show proudly our swimming pool and going into the janitor's closet. With that tremendous expertise, would it be appropriate for a mentor for me to be a mentor to anyone? I'll ask you that question.
I think with that vast range of experience, you'd be a wonderful mentor. And besides, you're willing to admit it.
This isn't public, is it?
I'll never tell.
Only to all of Oregon. Thank you. Okay. Is it Professor or Dr. Hitz?
Dr. Hitz.
Thank you, Doctor.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Randy Hitz. I'm the Dean of the Graduate School of Education at Portland State University, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify today. Thank you very much. I'm representing Portland State. I'm also representing the Oregon Association of Colleges for Teacher Education. The president of that organization wasn't able to make it today, but I have attached a position paper from that organization that they just approved yesterday. We are, I hope you can tell, very strongly supportive of this bill, and we thank you very much for considering it. I'm not going to go through all the reasons why we support this. I think others have articulated that very well. We look at it with the eyes of creating a seamless system, though, because we think that a good mentor program should inform teacher preparation. And likewise, teacher preparation should inform the mentor program. So our hope is that there's a continuing professional development opportunity for teachers, because we know that the learning never ends for professional educators. So with that in mind, we did come up with four, I would call minor, recommendations for amendments. I can go through those with you, Madam Chair. I know you're press for time, or I cannot do that. I think I've articulated them in ways that are clear enough for you to understand. It's up to you, Madam Chair.
Dr. Hitz, are these based on the original bill or on with the amendments?
I looked at the amendments also. The only one that is impacted by the amendments is my first recommendation, and my recommendation is basically consistent with the amendments.
Okay.
The others are not The amendments do not address the other changes.
Okay, thank you. Would you be willing to communicate with Representative Roblin about those? Is that all right, Representative?
I'd be very happy to do that, sure.
And that would be very helpful, and because he's been working with the team and knows who all the folks are that have been working on the amendments, so that he could get that communication out to them and get their input also.
I'd be happy to do that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes.
And it's very nice to meet you. One of these days I need to talk to you about my dissertation at PSU. I keep procrastinating.
And it's nice to meet you, and yes, I'd be happy to talk with you.
Thank you. After session.
Okay.
Thank you so much. Appreciate all of your time to be here with us. We're going to do a panel with Larry Wolf. Okay. Well, Larry, you might be on your own. The couple other people that I thought were going to present aren't here.
Okay.
Okay. Beth Ann, did you want to join or anything?
I'm going to hand out
a you're just going to let Larry handle it. Okay.
I'll be on
okay.
Well, Chair Comp and members of the committee and Representative Dallum, who is my representative and would have been my superintendent if I wouldn't have left 6 years ago to become an officer with OEA. So,
was in absentia.
I am, for the record, I'm Larry Wolf, president of the Oregon Education Association, and represent about 46,000 educators all over the state. And I'm here today to speak in favor of this particular bill. I'm just going to have a real quick story, because when I started in 78 as a teacher in the Chenoweth School District, I had a brand new principal. And he was new, and I was new, but I was a 7th and 8th grade science teacher, and he was a former science teacher as well. In the first year, for him to be a principal, first year for me to be an educator. And he was my mentor. And he helped me for 2 years, whether that's correct or not, listen to some of the testimony, but he helped me. I survived, but he didn't have a mentor. And after 2 years, he went back to the classroom, frustrated. And so I think that, you know, when we talk about mentoring, I think it's important not only for administrators but for educators as well. One of the things I'd like to leave you with was I had a conversation with the president of California Teachers Association a while back, and we were talking about mentoring. And I asked her, because I had heard in California that they had adopted a mentoring program a few years ago. And what she told me was that what they saw in California was before the mentoring program, almost half of their new teachers were leaving within the first 5 years. After they had put that program in place, that number dropped to 15%. And I think that's a significant number. And so I'm here today to encourage you to support this particular bill and be happy to answer any questions you may have, Senator.
Thank you. Yeah. And do you have time to stay until we have our last couple of presenters, so if there's any questions that you
sure.
can help us out with?
I'd be happy to.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay. We have some people that want to speak on this, and that is, Billy Joe Smith from Lincoln County. I wonder who's her representative. And John, John, if you'd come up and help me with your last name.
John Napolitano.
No.
Napolitano.
No. Say it slower.
Napolitano.
I'm so used to saying Spanish. Italian's a little tougher for me. Please go ahead.
My name is Billy Joe Smith, and I'm from Lincoln County. And Gene Cowan is my representative. Chair Comp and members of the committee, come to you today to very briefly share some insights I have on House Bill 2574. And I want to especially recognize and thank the chair and members of the committee who are actually sponsoring this bill. My background as a teacher, at the Curriculum and Instruction Resource for Teachers and Administrators, and as a former school board member, have made me painfully aware of the need for improving our support for beginning teachers and administrators. No industry would place new employees into the toughest possible situations with little or no guidance, support, or monitoring. I sadly remember my first year of teaching. I had just graduated from college with my degree in biology and was hired to teach high school general science and one biology class. I was only 3 years older than many of my students. The general science classes had a large number of students with severe disciplinary problems. My classroom would accommodate 24 students sitting at tables, but all of the general science classes were over 30 students, and one had 45. I couldn't even get the names on one sheet in the grade book. I had to go to the next page. For the first 8 weeks of the school year, I had no teaching materials for students, no textbooks for students. I had one sample copy of a general science textbook for myself. That was all I had. I did my best. I cried almost every night. And I can't believe I actually stayed the next year. I very definitely considered not doing it. It was the one biology class, which I loved, that saved me. And I knew that I could do well in teaching because I did well with that. That was 1963. Unfortunately, this type of scenario still exists in our schools today. Many young and brilliant teachers are leaving the profession because it's too difficult, it's too stressful. I retired from teaching in 2000, and since that time, the high school I left, the small high school, has hired 8 new teachers for 2 science positions. The teachers this year are new again. There's a lot of turnover. Mentor programs have shown to make a difference. When the first Oregon program began, it came with plentiful funding, and I served as a trainer of mentors in my district. And experienced teachers were paid to help new teachers in their buildings. In our district-wide meetings, I shared skills for analyzing instruction. I shared skills with them for finding resources to help these new teachers. The program was evaluated, and the new teachers were very grateful and valued the support that they had gotten. However, the mentors didn't really have the time or the skills that they needed to be truly effective. They were full-time teachers at the same time. They couldn't spend time in the classrooms with the new teachers. As the years passed, no funding was available to train and support the mentors. Some schools still appointed mentors for the new teachers, but the results were varied, and gradually the program has completely floundered. Mm-hmm. And I will say, too, that new principals need help and guidance as well. Highly successful schools have inspired and skilled leaders, yet in my experience, it's hard to find those folks because they don't get the support they need. And just as Chair Comp told us, it really makes a difference when you get that. The revisions in the Oregon Mentors Program are research-based, and they're proven to develop teachers and principals who are effective and choose to remain in their profession. You know, sometimes when we consider innovations, they cost a great deal, and they provide a little progress. But there are other things that have a relatively low cost and a huge payoff, and that's what the revisions to the Oregon Mentor Program will provide. There will be savings in money, but also benefits for our children in terms of their achievement and success. Please support the bill. I know you will. It sounds really good here. Help lobby for its funding so that it is supported in that way, too. And I want to thank you for allowing me to testify. I'd be happy to answer questions.
Thank you. Make sure that she gets Senator Devlin's phone number.
Oh, okay. Actually, he's on my list.
Right, because he'll want to, you know. But your support in a number of places, not just here today,
okay. It's
going to be very helpful to pass this bill.
Thank you very much.
John, please go ahead.
Yes, my name is John Napolitano. I'm a parent of a third grader in Hillsboro. And Hillsboro is a district that has about 30% of their teachers have 5 years or less of experience. So we are a growing community. We have a lot of new schools, and we have a lot of new teachers. And I'm speaking today strongly in favor of this bill because of my knowledge of the experience in Hillsboro. For example, we have a relatively new high school, Liberty High School, in Hillsboro, that is part of the Small School Initiative. There is a privately funded grant. We receive about $240,000 a year to organize the school as a series of small schools within the high school. And part of that funding, about a quarter of that funding, probably about $60,000 a year, goes for training and mentoring about 40 teachers. It's a fairly small amount. But when you talk to the people, the teachers, the people in charge of that program, about the excellent results that we were having at that school compared to the other schools, high schools in Hillsboro, what they point their finger at, they say, what's making really a difference is having a little bit of funding, a little bit of more time for teachers, especially the new teachers. They get some training, get some mentoring. It's really working. It's more effective than anything else they've done at that school through that grant. And I'm also a parent who volunteers in my daughter's school, an elementary school, Imla Elementary, and I see the importance of it's also a fairly new school with a fairly new staff, many new teachers, and I see the importance of a very dedicated, very quality staff, especially the principal, in creating an environment for education, for getting good results. So my personal experience in Hillsboro, you've seen the research probably, but my personal experience is that this is possibly this and increasing parent involvement in school. Those two are probably the best value for improving education of anything else, honestly. So I definitely I'm thank you for bringing this this bill forward, and I hope you will all support it. Thank you.
You're most welcome. Thank you for taking the time. Your voice as a parent is equally or more powerful today than all the rest of us. So, and thank you for volunteering in your school. Any questions for John? Nope? Okay.
Thank you
so much. We have about 15 minutes left or so, and so we wanted to have some question answer time about the amendments. And so if Sue Hildick would come forward along with Dana Hepper and Representative Roblin, the committee can be reflective and thoughtful. And Representative Kenna wants to go first once everybody's seated. Or Representative Dolan, yes.
Representative Chairman, I don't see anybody from ODE in the room, but I wonder.
But Superintendent Castillo was here earlier.
What I'm looking for, I think perhaps President Wolf could answer for us, is the number of new teachers we have, brand new teachers, in a given year. Any idea of what number that is that belong to the association?
Yeah, it's really fluctuating.
You'll have to. Thank you.
I didn't.
That's all right, Representative.
I'm trying to get some scale of what.
Right, how many?
Yeah, Chair Compton, Representative Dallum. I don't have any specific figures on that, but I know that in some of our school districts over the last 3 or 4 years, they've seen as much as 50% new educators in their buildings. So it varies by building. But there's a tremendous number of new teachers that are coming into the profession, definitely.
You have to say your name again.
Oh, I'm sorry. Larry Wolf, President of the OEA.
Thank you.
Chair Comp, Representative Dallum, I can add to that. Dana Hepper, Stand for Children. When we were researching this proposal, TSPC said that they estimated between Teacher Standards and Practices Commission estimated between 800 and 1,200 new teachers each year. We made our cost estimates of approximately $30 million to fully fund a comprehensive research-based mentor program at about $30 million on the understanding that there were about 1,200 new teachers each year. So we kind of took the high end of that range.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Cannon.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. We heard from, I know, the Canby superintendent, and perhaps I think one of the, perhaps John, who testified for the need among beginning teachers in particular for more time in their crazy and hectic teaching lives. And I wonder if the work group gave any consideration to devoting some of these resources not only to funding the mentor, the experienced teacher, a retired teacher who's critical to the program, but also to creating some more space in the day for these beginning teachers who are going all day long with 30 or 40 kids at a time.
Chair Comp, Representative Cannon, when we look at the research, what we find the most support behind is this mentoring model, and what that actually translates to is to teachers that are more efficient in their planning, grading, et cetera. So the time is created not because we're releasing teachers from duties that they have, but instead because we're making them more effective and efficient at the responsibilities they do have. And I can certainly share that when in North Clackamas School District where I taught, the district had a mentor. Unfortunately, because of lack of funding, we had one mentor for the 60 new teachers in the district. So we had quite a caseload, more than most of us teachers. But he did visit my room 3 times, and each of those times he gave me incredibly valuable advice on how to plan more efficiently and more effectively for different levels of learners, for group instruction, and a variety of other things that made me a better teacher. And I can only imagine if he were there every week, all of my weeks would have been less stressful and my time would have been used more effectively.
I'll just speak to the fact that, you know, I think individual schools may see that and figure out different ways to do within the fundings that they have. In as we were researching this bill and as I was involved with this bill, the issue was, how do we get the, you know, we know there's limited resources and there's things that we can do. And where are we going to put those limited resources that will give us the best opportunity to have the best results? And that means better trained teachers who stay longer and have the skills they need to cope with all those things that time puts on them. And also to make sure that what we're investing in, you know, has been proven. The time, you know, every teacher out there can be more effective and do better if they had a little more time to do some things. But, you know, that was not something that really came into our discussions much, because what we were trying to find was what's working out there in places which are living under the same conditions we are and still is making things happen that we need to have happen, i.e. give them the skills and stuff that they need. And, you know, I will tell you that this whole process of this bill, and I will commend these people, is kind of a birthing process, because this is not the bill that we came with. and when you talk to the amendments, and in a lot of ways it's much better. You know, Stan had found a particular program that worked in California and it had amazing results. And they came saying, this is what we need to have. Do everybody do the same thing? And Chalkboard had done lots and lots of research on mentor programs all over and said, we have to have a mentoring program. There is absolutely no doubt. And it has certain characteristics to it. The STAND program met those characteristics, but it wasn't the only one that had worked. And so what transpired was a lot of people coming and other people as well. This is, you know, a number of the universities put in input, a number of other groups out there put in input, and they can talk some more of that. But what comes here is we've took the best of all of that and said, how do we make a new program for Oregon? And I think that's what the amendments show. And I looked at just the few comments on those other little amendments they're talking about, and I, you know, we have to look at those, but.
Chair Comp and Representative Cannon, my name is Sue Hildick with the Chalkboard Project. That's an issue we'd really like to talk about in the future. Our work group on educator quality not only recommended the mentorship program and the collaborative for professional development, they also recommended 10 additional professional development days for every teacher in the state. We have not put that forward yet because we think these are the building blocks that need to be in place, and we know that that's a longer-term discussion, but there is no question that time is a major factor in all of this, and so that's something we'd hope to discuss in the future.
Madam Chair, I do want to just flag for the record my concern, and this is certainly not to stand in the way of the good work that's been done and the flexibility that's been built into this bill, but my concern about the fact that the stipend is required, as I read the statute of the proposed amendment, it is to compensate individuals assigned duties, to compensate mentors or other individuals that are helping with the mentoring. And Dan, I really appreciate your comments about the way in which a mentor can help make a teacher more efficient. At the same time, if that's a mentor who's in my classroom for an hour a week or a couple of hours a week instead of 3 times a year, that's a time that I'm probably not going to be grading papers, even if it's going to help me be more efficient grading them at home. So I just think we need to be sensitive to the fact that for teachers, while this will be hugely useful and will improve their teaching and will improve the lives of students, which is what we're all after, it's also, there is this real-world sort of time consideration that I think we ought to pay attention to, and I would love to see this built with more flexibility to allow perhaps schools or districts to say, you know, we're going to use some of this $5,000 per student to help create some more time for certain teachers to work with their mentors. So that's my comment, and I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, thank you. Representative Wisnett, you had a question next.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To anyone on the committee, I had a couple of items, and you know, let's be sure that my name's on here as a sponsor of this, so I'm not asking the question. I'm asking the question so I understand it and I can advocate for it to the people with the money. I got two questions. On page 3 of the amendments, we talk about a school district may enter into a partnership with another school district, an institute of higher education, educational service district, and so forth. I don't see in the bill or the amendments, I mean, this seems like it's going to be a detailed financial arrangement to have to do this. How, you know, have you thought about that, how the money's going to be paid, how you're going to get it to these other institutions? And Representative Cannon just said, I mean, is it going to, you know, you've got different categories of hours or pay that they're going to be in there. And the second thing I have is I'm sure that you've talked or you're working on performance measures. Will this committee see those performance measures before it goes to Ways and Means? Will it only be in Ways and Means?
Representative, or Chair Comp, Representative Wisnett, Dana Hepper, Stand for Children. The performance measures, we've narrowed the evaluation performance measures in the bill to really focus on the two things that we care most about, which are increasing student achievement and increasing retention of new teachers and principals and superintendents. So I think we've really focused there in the bill, and we would like to spend, we've asked for funding in the second year of the biennium. We would like to spend the first year working with ODE to hammer out a lot more administrative detail, which we didn't feel fit in state law. So you won't see it before it goes to Ways and Means, but you will see it before it's a funded program.
Thank you. Follow-up, Madam Chair?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, Dana. The thing about the performance measure, because I have some experience in that, and you're saying you're going to evaluate how the students and the administrators are doing. If I'm not what I've studied, you really need to evaluate the mentors, because they're the ones that we're paying, and you're not, you know, you can't blame the teachers if the mentors are not doing a good job. So your performance measure may want to be directed towards the mentors and not the teachers and the.
I'll speak to that because.
Representative Roland.
Representative Roland, thank you, Chair Crum. What we have looked at with regard to what those benchmarks, what we're trying to improve, those standards, really goes back to the students and the teachers. Now, we believe that a mentor program does that. So if you institute a mentor program and you don't have improvement on teacher retention, whatever, we are going to say that's a problem with the mentor program and mentors. And school districts have a responsibility to either work on that. But the real goals we want have to do with student achievement, and when you set the standards in Ways and Means or wherever, that's what we're trying to improve. And, you know, even if you look at some of the other educational standards that they've set out there, they have to do with things like cutting down the number of students that are in the criminal justice system or some other kinds of things. If you look at some of those others, those are the kinds of things that we believe if you put this program in, you will impact those things. And just because we have really great mentors, if we don't do the other things that we're supposed to be doing, that wouldn't make this a successful program. It has to impact those particular things, retention and achievement, or the mentor program isn't doing what it's supposed to. I agree that having good mentors is an important part of that, and hopefully the contracts and the other kinds of things that we sign with ESDs and higher education institutions will evaluate those parts of their program, because that's what we're going to be buying from them. But from the state's perspective, what we're buying for the state is higher achievement in students and retention of teachers, both of which cost us a lot of money.
Okay, we have Representative Buckley and Representative Dahlem. You're going to get the final word today.
Thank you.
Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I hope I'll be pretty quick here. On page 7, section 8, subsection 2, First, let me compliment the work group for the work on the amendments. I think it's fantastic work, really excellent. In that section I quoted, there's a discussion about the department being able to accept contributions of money for the purpose of evaluation, and it seems to say evaluation only. And I'm wondering what the thought process on that was, whether we might be considering a point in the future where we could accept money for evaluation, but also for funding the program as well, if there were donors willing to assist with this. Was there a discussion on why we narrowed it to just evaluation?
Chair Comp, Representative Buckley, Dana Hepper. We would like to see the state fully fund mentoring of new educators and not leave that important task to private funders. And so we focused really on evaluation because for Stanford Children and Chalkboard Project, we really want to make sure that something we're out advocating for turns out to be effective and gets us results for children. And so while we're asking the state to step up and fully fund the mentor piece, we're willing to go out and help seek private donations to go above and beyond and do more comprehensive evaluation as needed.
And just to add to that, it goes back to the things that I talked about at the beginning and other people talked to, and that is a sustainable program. And when you go out and look for funds, pretty soon, if you're successful, those funds take over and we start slipping out of our responsibility from the state perspective. And then all of a sudden, the interest in that organization changes and the money goes away and there's nothing there. And everybody says, well, why aren't we funding this program anymore? And that is not acceptable if you really want this to work over time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Very good question. Representative Dahlem.
Yes, I'd like to thank the members of the committee and Chalkboard. It's not instinct driven, it's data driven. I know mentors will help. But we're talking about $30 million, so I'm going to ask you to make Sophie's choice. Would I be better served with mentors, smaller classes, or more in service? Right now our schools are struggling, and I'm convinced that if we meet the governor's budget, if we exceed the governor's budget, we're going to struggle. Schools in my district are wrestling with how to put a roof on. So if you had to prioritize, which our school districts are having to do, would you take smaller class size, in-service for staff, or the mentoring program?
I'll go first.
Go ahead.
You know, there are limits, and it depends on where you're at in class size. I would say elementary, lower class size, probably, as I've looked at the research, biggest bang for the buck. I want some money there. I think that's really important if we really want all kids to be successful as we go through this program. But having smaller class sizes with inadequately trained and non-supported teachers doesn't help a lot either. And so my second one goes to mentoring. And you heard some of the people here, professors, talking about how important that this is kind of the bedrock issue with respect to having great teachers in our schools. We have done in the past, we've developed great teachers for most of our great teachers in a deal, throw them in there, the great ones survive and the other ones leave. We can't afford that any longer.
No.
We don't have enough people. We have to be successful with them, and if we expect to have any growth in our student achievement, it means we have to have an exceptional teacher in every classroom and an exceptional principal in every school. And the only way you get there, in my opinion, is good teachers and training and a mentor program that helps that person, after they've got some of the skills, get the rest so they can pay to the kids. So that for me, that's where I would put some of the money.
After that, Artie, I'm going to paraphrase. Mentors, then training, then class size.
No, I put class size
class
first.
First.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Chair Comp and Representative Dahlem, I would echo that. I think that's a strong list. When Representative Minnis was here and Chalkboard first started to present on our bill, she asked that question. And we said we think all of these things need to happen this session, and we would stand behind that. They work together. One doesn't work in isolation from the others. Lower class size, mentor for new teachers, strong professional development, efficiencies, stable funding. That's the package that we see. And we'd have a hard time saying just one of those is going to do the job to put us on a path to a top 10 performing school system.
And
I would just add quickly that it will cost us over $300 million if we wanted to lower class size to the level that suggested would provide us a quality education in the quality education model. And yet we can do mentoring really well with $30 million. So I think it's a very high leverage investment that's worth making.
Thank you for this panel. I just want to take a moment before we. I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 2574. But before I conclude the meeting today, I want to just share my appreciation for everybody that's here. This is something that we've been needing for a long time. A tremendous amount of work has gone together with the work group to put the amendments together. We do have some more suggestions, and so I'm excited that we're having this type of discussion, that we can hopefully put safety nets and assurance that our children's needs we met. And as a former teacher and principal, our most valuable asset in the education system is our teachers. And we need to invest in our teachers. And it's just critical for all of our success. So any last words from any of the committee? Thank you for coming, and we'll see you next Thursday. This hearing is adjourned today.
Thank you, ma'am.